right, welcome Katharina Lemos, if I pronounce that, your name right?
Yes.
And welcome to the podcast. And this is the, I think this is the first one ever not done on site at home. I did a few in person a long time ago, but mostly they're on over the phone. So this is the first time doing out and about. And it's perfectly appropriate at your store because your store, your lovely bookstore in Port Jefferson, also known as Sauwasset to the native peoples, it's like being in someone's living room. You have a couch and a bunch of chairs around a table and a nice carpet. So it's a perfect environment for that. So yeah, welcome. And what made you want to have such a casual gathering space for a bookstore?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure. You know, because it's one thing to get invited for something like this when people don't know you and just know the store, but you know me by now and you're still inviting me. It's even a more bigger honor. So yeah, it was kind of a decision of how to set up the store is to also have built a community of people that love books, but not just books, just exploring knowledge and discussing different topics. I always like doing that. I did it a lot online, and I was like finally able to do it, to create a space to do it with people in person, this real life. So yeah, that's why I created it that way.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful gathering space. You know, I've been to some of the open mics already, and you know, people sit around the table and read the poems, and you've got music. There's so many things going on. It's really a great addition to the town. You know, providing a sense of community. And when I was thinking about what to ask you, I thought the most obvious question is, you know, how did you get lit with literature that you wanted to open a bookstore?
Well, I always loved books and stories as a kid, you know, I was always reading already. And then later on, I had to kind of focus a lot of just reading about my work and science. But then when my daughter came and she started reading, I wanted to create books that kind of reflect who we are too, and include us in the literature world as her curious little mind exploring the world, and that kind of created another layer of interest of not just reading but also creating stories that kind of explore the world. And it's a really great way to travel into other people's mind. And interestingly, even in my science work and neuroscience, my like crazy dream was, what if we could travel into other beings' minds, like in a way, like in a very way to really sense it. And I think the closest that we have are books to
yeah. That is neat. I've thought about that sometimes, how you can pick up a book from however long ago, or, you know, and I think writers think about that as far as like a legacy of, I mean, I don't think about it in a morbid way, but I think about it like, you know, someone is going to read the books, you know, after I'm out of my body, and it's like this kind of like the book goes on. Yeah. So I think about that a lot too. And then, I try to balance that again with that like native perspective of, you know, that we've talked about sometimes, how the trees are like living, you know, libraries, and so the, you know, you can talk to them and learn from them as well, without, like, they go back in history too.
Yeah.
Like natives refer to them as elders.
Yeah.
So, which is really deep. So I think, you know, like I try to balance that love of books with also not being too much of a bookworm, because I don't want to lose touch with,
yeah, you know, with
the literal
world.
Tree. And I think you're similar that way. We have that affinity of interest, so that, yeah, it's you opened in November, and it's been like, what's that, 5-6 months?
Yeah,
it's
6 months
nice. You've,
now. Yeah.
You've had me do some events. We've become friends.
Yeah.
And your whole family is very friendly. It's just a wonderful space to hang out. And yeah, what about your, you? How many books do you have, the kids' books for your daughter, Alicia?
Oh, yeah.
Like 8 or 9, right?
Yeah, we have 10 Alicia's discoveries, and then I have 2 different books, a little bit different topics, books for children. One is like the Passover of the future, and the other one is a chapter book where Alicia's older, and then there's some time travel in there to explain different physics laws, and but in a sci-fi adventure, basically.
Yeah, that's so. A new one you showed me about, like, I thought it was very good. Moses in the future.
Yeah.
And the technology.
The rise against technology. Yeah, so the story is that in the future, the humans are slaves to technology, robots, AIs. And then there's a kid that very similar to Moses, that gets then adopted and grows up to help humanity rise against technology. And it's all in rhymes for the first time, and has questions and discussion topics in there too. So
yeah, that's great. I read it. I enjoyed it, and obviously, it's like a warning to the future. But at some degree, it's already happening.
That's
you know,
true.
A lot of people are walking around. You know, people are already sort of enslaved, and the AI has me even more concerned.
Yes,
you know, it's
definitely.
Becoming like you know, the amount of countries and dollars and. I even had a young friend, I think he's like 14, and he was mentioning AI, and I was like throwing in my 2 cents, saying like, you know, be careful, you can't, you know, where's that information coming from, who knows? So yeah, it's a big, big topic. Another cool thing about your store is you've got like a bunch of I would sort of loosely categorize esoterica, spirituality, philosophy, and my favorite section is it's literally called Mind Open. You have that written on the thing in the section, Mind Open. So how did you get, how did your interest, with your science, neuroscience background, how did you get like that? Because that's kind of like a balance. Like a lot of science people are very, you know, like that's one of the issues today where science is like sort of like the new, somewhat new godhead.
Yes,
and it's like,
I agree.
If science says it, it must be true,
and
that's God.
Yeah.
And obviously that's not totally true. I mean, it has its place. So how did you get like that wide perspective?
So I actually, when I was young, before I went into science and focused on that, I was very interested in spirituality since teenager years. And I read all the Carlos Castaneda books in my teenager years, and then I kind of, as I said, I focused a lot just because of time, having kids and being in the science field and doing a PhD. I just didn't have too much time to spend in that world, basically, too much. But I felt like over time I needed it to balance myself. Mm-hmm. Like I was way too stressed. So I started to do, you know, mindfulness practices again and reading about it. To be healthy, to be like a healthy human being in total, and spend more time in nature again, and writing a little bit again. So I always thought this balance is important. Mm-hmm. and science is an ongoing process of whoever says this is how it is and that's it, I would say those people are not real scientists. They are probably like journalists for science.
Interesting.
Because when you write the actual scientific paper, they would throw it into your face if you say, this is for sure how it is. You always have to say, right now with the equipment we have and the tools we have, this seems to be the process. But and then you usually have to write what would be an alternative explanation and what we should do in the future to basically continue on that quest. So, if you do it right, and I think also in life, you always continue on a quest of basically finding more things out about you, about the world, and also become grow spiritually at the same time.
Yeah, that's when you started talking about that, it made me think of the spontaneity of nature and that, like, the beingness of nature, like the, you know, the Lakota people and other natives, they refer to the thunder as like thunder beings. And so, you know, and they literally, like, when the first thunder of the year happens, it, like, literally is like a vibrational wake up of the earth. But I think about that sometimes with the weather, which is very often inaccurate. You know, they predict the weather, and I, you know, because I think, like, the weather has a mind, like, the whatever's up there at some spiritual level has a mind of its own.
Yeah.
So that, like, you know, the clouds or whatever, I'm just kind of making this up, but I think it has accuracy. You know, the clouds and the rain, it looks like it's going to rain over this, you know, town, but then, you know, the clouds or whatever, the beings, some kind of being there will be like, eh, let's go over here now. Yeah. You know, like, they could change their mind too, for whatever reason, who knows? And so I think that gets lost in the, you know, the science of, well, it's going to rain today. You know, and it's not always accurate. So I think that being open to that spontaneity is part of, that science has its place, but that there's a, like, a wild card energy. And there I think is. That's what quantum, you know, you've got a bunch of books about quantum mechanics and stuff. I think that's some of what quantum mechanics is starting to prove, that there is this, what's going to happen next is like an unknown.
It is.
For the most part, even though we know it's May and it's going to, the sun's going to, see, what's going to happen next? I hear a truck. No, even though we know what time the sun's going to rise and set and that kind of thing, but there's this unknown happening.
Yeah, there's always like in the weather prediction, they use like, I think most of the time three different models, and then they make a merge out of it, and then they tell you the mom. But it's based on different theories. But it's really kind of unpredictable, and I think it's important for us to realize that even with all the technology we have and created to kind of safeguard us from the world, there's no way to do that. I think it's like a lot of ways of people that are constantly scared to kind of create like walls around ourselves and think and make the illusion that you're safe. But there's no way. We all go through wonderful things in life and very traumatic things and horrible things. Like, we all go through it.
All the range.
We never know. And just to be able to cope with that uncertainty, I think you need something else. You need to have a trust and a belief, or if, you know, that and, like, as you said, like, being open-minded or open-hearted to receive what comes to you and have this faith that it's gonna be fine.
It's funny what you said about the weather reminded me of John Trudell, that native speaker. I was sharing that DNA, his album with you recently. He talks about the power, like, nature, that true power, like the blizzard and the rainstorm, like, that's power. You know, not, you know, man thinks he has power, but that's like next time there's a windstorm, I just go outside and remember, like, that's power. But he said something funny too. He was like talking about people and protesting, and he said, like, you know, when there's a storm or something, like, what the powers that, I call them the powers that do too much instead of the powers that be. But he was like, what are they gonna do? Indict it? You know, like you can't lock. His point was amusing but deep. Like, you can't lock up, I think he says, like, in the machine age, you can't lock up, you know, in a machine, you can't put the, you know, in, even though they're maybe trying to manipulate weather, but that's to the point that. That openness and open range of, anyway, sidetracking on topics. But coming back to the bookstore, okay, the name now, it's an interesting name. It's very different.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, people comment sometimes, like, how'd you get that name? Global Language Reads is the name of the store.
Well, I was most of my life an immigrant. I'm originally from Portugal and immigrated. In like after second grade to Germany, and and my mother worked for the European Parliament, so she was in France a lot and Luxembourg, so there wasn't always the perspective that there are a lot of cultures and and languages and our, you know, family, friends. And then people don't realize, I think, in bigger countries that where everything is translated to your language, that people that created all these stories are from all over the world. So I guess that's where the idea and the name also comes from, but also then the initials are my oldest son's initials.
So. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
GLR was his musician.
Yeah. Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, so it's both.
It's a good honoring of him too.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think, like, if you think of it a little bit, Germany is kind of the U.S. of Europe, I always feel like.
Oh, wow, that's an interesting statement. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, so when you watch TV, everything is translated to German, and people barely know other language. I mean, they have other language in school, but that they actually, so the theory of another language is there. But then actually, if you try to talk in another language with a lot of Germans, like out on the street, not at the university, you know, it's kind of hard. Like, people don't know too much other language. And this perspective is very German-centered perspective because it's a bigger country in Europe. So, so when people travel, like, Germans travel, they kind of expect everyone in the hotels in Spain and so on to speak German. If not, they won't go there. So I've literally heard somebody say, oh, all these foreigners here, but they themselves were in Turkey in that instance. So, you know, and then I feel like since the U.S. is such a big country and it's always very English-centered, most people, and the view is very U.S.-centered view. I feel like that just comes with, like, a big economy, big country, that you kind of lose the perspective of the global and how many other countries and cultures contributed to, basically, your culture and knowledge, too.
Yeah, it's a cool name because it fits, like, I think it both, like, the spirit of the store is so wide-ranging and embracing all different ways of thinking that it fits that, and it also fits the world nowadays, you know, because of all the connectivity and technology, the global village, that phrase. It's like the world's got smaller in a way.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I like about the name.
And global language, I know I can't have possibly, because my budget is limited and my space is limited. Maybe one day if I have a bigger budget, I would represent even more languages. But the thing is, the dying out of languages is a real thing, like an extinction of cultures.
Yeah.
And every day there is a culture and language dying. Even wherever you go in the world, in every country, there used to be these sub-languages of different groups of people that sometimes differ significantly from the main language spoken in that country. And all of this is kind of, the world's getting oversimplified and a lot of knowledge is just dying with that. So if I would have endless budget, I would have out of each language that I could get my hands on something representing here, but that's... It's something.
That simplification is like the dumbing down, the genericizing and dumbing down, and everybody's like saying the same thing.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, hey, you know, hey, what's up? How you doing? You know, good. Catch you later. My bad.
Yeah.
There's like so many, no worries. It's like sometimes the phrases are appropriate, but sometimes I feel like people are like walking around like robots saying the same thing.
And the clothes, you know, it reflects in the clothes where you go around the world. It's always the same stores. The same coffees.
Yeah, well, that's the corporate. The corporate main street.
Yeah, it's good for making money for big corporations, but for our knowledge pool to solve or think, we need different ways of thinking.
Well, that's another reason why, you know, the store is such a treasure downtown. It's like very, you know, it's the opposite of that, and you're really open. Expanding and so that's why I love the store, because it has that vibe of you know, not trying to narrow mind things, but be open. Yeah. The language thing reminded me of like one of those mind-blowing things that my Lakota friend said, that before 1492, before Columbus got here, that there were 6,000 different native nations with as many languages.
Yeah.
Like, that just is just mind-blowing to consider, that, you know, because now there's like 550-something federally recognized native people, and a lot of their languages are in jeopardy. And like, some are coming back, some are being, mm-hmm. but like you said, there's a whole knowledge base that comes with those.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so much, it's just unlimited what's to learn.
Exactly. You know? It is. And yeah, it's that was also a thing that what motivated me always was exploring different mm-hmm. cultures and knowledges. And
And then, you know, one more thing I can think of for now, like a while ago you said when you were younger you wanted to like join a commune.
Yes, I did.
So I you know, when you told me that, I thought, wow, I can see how that you're sort of catching up on the vibe. You know, the feel of the store is very, you know, it's very open and, you know, in quote communal, you know, as much as like a business can be.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was my whole plan as a teenager, to never participate in the social structures the Western world created, mm-hmm. which I felt like were very toxic for us, and live independently. But then life came about, I became pregnant, and I needed to provide mm-hmm. for another being. So
yeah,
I kind of went back to, you know, just well, I could at least stay kind of curious. I thought if I choose to go back to society, I literally dropped out of high school and everything.
Oh, wow.
So if I go back, at least I want to do something that, you know, I can keep exploring mm-hmm. the world. And yeah, so that's why I went into science in that regard. And it opened up a lot of possibilities for me to live in different places too, mm-hmm. And have like a job, basically, yeah. always, and, you know, a stable health insurance and stuff, because science, you can have 1 year, 2 year assignments where you can expand them sometimes, but and then you go to different places if you have the skills, and they'll take you in, and then you can live there and explore the world in that little place too.
Yeah, another thing too, I was thinking, I'm looking at your little poodle Daisy, mm-hmm. who's all black, or dark gray.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's adorable. But I was just realizing how a stereotypical bookstore has a cat in the window, but you have Daisy.
I have Daisy.
She's very, very welcoming to people, and your family too. Does everybody in your family as much of a reader as you, or not quite? Couldn't be quite as much.
Well, no, not. My different kids read different, like, they are all very good readers, but I guess as everyone struggles right now with having your kids slowing just down
reading.
And taking the attention to read, my sons, they're always very interested in like history, ancient history, mm-hmm. all these different tribes and so on. And then my daughter, not so much, she likes more like Judy Blume type of books.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, so it's more, but this might change over time too. And Patrick, he likes reading, he just doesn't take too much of the time, I guess, as much as I do. But
that's normal.
But in general, we like, you know, knowledge and exploring, and music, like a big part of my family mm-hmm. loves making music.
Yeah, they go together. Like, that's my feeling. Like, I say, like, I could listen to about half an hour of poetry and I start to get, as much as I love poetry, mm-hmm. I can listen to half an hour and it starts to be like a bit much sometimes, but like music I can listen to all day.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think it fuels my writing, because like, it's really important to have like a rhythm, and the sound mm-hmm. of it is as much important Like, that's a book I remember from, I think, high school, maybe even grade school. It's called Sound and Sense. It's a classic poetry book. And I remember nothing about the book, but just that's like a guiding light for me with poetry is sound, that it makes some sense. It's not so abstract that, you know, wacky poetry where you're like, what the heck does that mean?
Yeah.
but the sound of it, too, is really important.
Yeah. I agree. There are some theories that the first language basically was music. Like, before we had this very specific language with letters and very specific words to get people together and be on the same emotional state, people would make music together and either dance or celebrate or go to war. There's also music to start, you know, making people kind of riled up to like become aggressive and go all together to war. You know, you had always like these guys in the front. Like the military has still, a music.
Yeah, the bands and the marches.
The bands and to keep the emotions up. So, yeah, there's a theory that first there was music, basically. And then a more specific sounds came about. And then, like, real language came.
Well, yeah, nature, you know, nature has music if you quiet to listen to the wind and the rain and all that.
And yeah, it has different rhythms too, depending on the day, to the birds.
Oh yeah.
Like
Wow. Anything else about the store? You got so much going on here. There's classes in the evening and the music events, open mic. You give talks. You have journals for sale and other gifts and used books and new books. There's so much going on. Anything you wanna? Kids room. You got a beautiful kids room with artwork on the wall.
Yeah.
And kids books. I don't know. Yeah, I'm trying to sum it up. It's hard to sum up, but so people
we
help local people to be interested. So anything else you wanna add?
We talked about the books a lot. About the Mind Open, I started since I do the ladies' nights, some tarot readings too.
Oh, okay, that's right. You got little.
Yeah,
nook.
I have a little side
with nook. A curtain.
It's interesting because people ask me, how can you merge that with you being a scientist and then do tarot readings? And I answer, you know, if your mind is open, you can use. It's just a time we sit together and talk about life, and we look at cards. Cards are kind of neutral; they cannot judge you. So I feel like the way the cards help is just for us to be more open, because when we talk with another person, a lot of people are afraid to be judged, and I think the cards are just a neutral entity in the room that we can make a story of and then interpret our life and make good life goals without me being the person judging or saying it. It's just a card, so we can blame it both sides, and then we can be more open and talk more openly about what we really want and really think. I think that's the whole thing. And it becomes more honest, and then people think, oh, this was a very accurate reading, but I think just because it's the conversation was just honest. And once a conversation is honest, you feel like that reading was accurate.
Yeah, that's neat. Not too much to get into now, but that whole topic of judgment and like that dogmatic upbringing that a lot of people have, that's, you know, this is good and bad, and, you know, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, and, you know, that I think that feeds people's comments, and, and books are kind of at least a way to, one way to, like, open your, you know, just to be able to read and not judge, you know, just learn about people and all kinds of people. That's some of my favorite writers and some of my favorite plays, like some of my favorite playwrights, like Tennessee Williams and Edward Albee and the little bit that I know, like the characters are so nuanced that, like, they can be doing things that, like, I'm trying to describe it because they present the characters as human beings, and you're not ready to say good or bad or judge them. you know, like, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I think maybe it's Streetcar Named Desire or Stanley Kowalski, you know, maybe he like slaps, mm-hmm. he slaps a woman or something, and it's like, it's quote bad, mm-hmm. but you at the same time you feel, you know, at least when I'm watching, I feel for him because you know, the reader or the viewer knows his story, and it's yeah. like there's the empathy for like, oh, he's having a hard time.
Yeah.
So instead of just saying it's bad, it's not condoning the violence or whatever, but it's like understanding the character.
Yeah.
To the point that, you know, it's open-ended. So I think that to me is some of the best literature, is when it just presents the person as a human being, and yeah, and it's not a good or bad about them. It's yeah. not the evil versus good
yeah.
storyline. So anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else you want to add? We covered a wide range.
No. Thank you so much for having me. And this was a very interesting discussion. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Katharina. And I'm trying to say your name with a little bit of that Portuguese accent.
Thank you.
So, yeah, thanks so much for making the time. And for listeners who are local, I encourage people to come visit the store and check out all the activities.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a good day.